Blog Talk Radio.
Up next, the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark.
Good morning, sports fans. This is JP and Mark on the Sports Offensive. I am JP. Mark is on the phone lines today. We had an unfortunate, unexpected delay here. Mark, how you doing?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, fine.
Okay, perfect. Nice Sunday morning. It's going to be another hot day. We were supposed to get a nice little break, but it never really got that cool, unfortunately. But, Olympics, which, it was all right. But, I mean, we never got any 70s, which I was hoping for. So,
no, you're not going to get that unless you go to the mountains, man.
Well, we're starting to head to the cooler period of the summer, hopefully. So, but, loving the Olympics and baseball getting exciting. And we're getting real close to fantasy football draft time. And it's kind of it's a fun time of year.
It is our favorite time of year, actually. Out there in the fantasy land, we are about to have our draft, and it's going to be great because we're going to talk a lot about fantasy football today. And, Mark, what do you have to say about that? Because I have a lot of theories on how the draft might go, but what do you think?
Well, we always have the Eagle fans in our draft. We've got four or five.
Eagles fans don't count for anything right now because our team's going to finish 5-11.
True. A lot of times that has factored into drafting. That might retard it quite a bit, except for somebody will take Ryan Matthews without thinking, and probably somebody will end up taking, I'm guessing, Ertz, because he did have a pretty good year, so. But we'll see what happens there. I don't think Bradford is going to be too high on anybody's fantasy drafting list. I have done a few mocks just to kind of get a sense of the fantasy world. the craziest thing so far is that the first three picks in almost every draft have been receivers, and I've never seen that before. It's been some combination.
Really?
So it's Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham Jr. and Julio Jones in some order. Brown has always been first. Now, I think I've done four total mocks, so not a ton. Mostly just to see the first and second round, to see what people did. And,
I've got to say Aaron Rodgers has to be in the top three picks.
In the top three? No.
Yes.
He's only got 4 points per touchdown, so. You would never want to take a quarterback that early in our draft. But if you're in a league that has 6 points per touchdown, then you might be able to go Aaron Rodgers. But the consensus of the fantasy world, not me kind, but the fantasy writers and whatnot, Cam Newton is posted as the number one quarterback, and it's not close. And I think that's because he can run a little bit. He gets touchdowns. Cam Newton. So he runs a little bit, he gets some rushing touchdowns, and I think they're thinking that with no receivers other than Greg Olsen last year, the guy had great passing numbers. So you're going to be able to, Funchess is going to be a year more ready. They're going to get, Kelvin Benjamin going to get him from back from the DL. So Cam Newton could have himself one of those, amazing type seasons. You always have to ask yourself, though, do you want a quarterback in the first round when you know that means it's going to drop down your position players significantly from every other team?
Well, the mock drafts that I have has Cam Newton rated as the third quarterback.
Who's number two?
Third, man. I've seen third.
So who's the number two quarterback they have ranked?
Right now it's Aaron Rodgers and Luck.
Really? Wow, that's a lot of optimism on
the mock drafts I've seen.
Wow. Luck's got talent. There's no question there.
It brings up the conversation.
Yeah, I just, boy, I don't know about Luck. He's only got T.J. or T.Y. Hilton. They don't have a second receiver. They don't have a third receiver. They don't have a good running back. I mean, I don't know about that offense.
ESPN has Cam Newton as a second-tier quarterback. Not even a first-tier. Second-tier.
That's crazy.
They have five quarterbacks rated above him.
Well, I mean, quarterbacks is an interesting position because who knows who's going to be first. It could be – I mean, Drew Brees was the second overall quarterback from week four on, and nobody seems to realize that. Aaron Rodgers, obviously, is a stud. You've got I just think, you know, Cam Newton had an amazing year and has really had three good years in a row. Russell Wilson, he seems poised to have a massive breakout. You know, Romo, if he stays healthy all year, he could have some really good numbers this year, especially with that offensive line.
I got Luke riding on that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to draft him, but, you know, there's also Ben Roethlisberger. Anybody who's got Antonio Brown, is going to have a good year. So, I don't know. Draft is going to be interesting. I either want to get the first or second pick because I don't want Julio Jones, or I want the fifth pick and get Gurley or Adrian Peterson, or I want the 10th pick so I can get the wraparound.
Let's say you get the 9th pick in the draft. What would you take if it's available?
Ooh, that's just ugly all the way around. But here's the problem is I don't know who's going to be available. I really have no idea. This is going to be the most interesting draft that I've been through.
Yes.
Because
it's going to be crazy. I can't wait for it.
We could have six wide receivers here on the first round. I mean, I don't even know what to expect. So
yeah, it's going to be that crazy.
I just think you've got three top receivers, and you've got two, maybe three top running backs, and everything after that's a crapshoot. I mean, there could be plenty of other great players, but I just don't know. I don't know who you pick. I don't know who you take. You know, I don't know who you think of as a lock. You've got Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham, Julio Jones. Those are the top receivers. You know, you've got your Brandon Marshall, your Jordy Nelson, your Demaryius Thomas, your Dez Bryant, your A.J. Green. You know, all those guys are fantastic. But who's the guy who is really a difference maker? And if you think about teams that win,
you have to go running back and quarterback there.
But then who are the running backs you go? Because you can go Gurley and AP are legit number one picks, I think.
Matt Jones, maybe? Buying the odds at his age. AP, Adrian Peterson. He defies the odds at his age.
And he's not somebody I want to take either because you don't want to ever get that drop off. So that's why I'm saying this year is going to be a lot different than anything I've ever seen before. And, you know, I'm sorry, I said Matt Jones. I meant to say David Johnson from Arizona.
That's precise.
Now, other questions out there are Ezekiel Elliott. Now, I'll never take a rookie running back in the first five rounds only because even a great rookie, the greatest rookies, get tired in week 10 because they're used to college football and not NFL.
I'll never take a Dallas Cowboy in the first five rounds.
Well, that's a whole different issue. But, he's got the most amazing offensive line, a good offensive-minded coach. So he would have I think he'll have good numbers for when he plays. I just don't think that he'll be a fantasy difference maker.
I think
in weeks 11 through 15 or 16. So
think
you never know.
You never know.
Think about Todd Gurley, right? So people get Gurley last year. He's a little bit hurt, so he misses the first few weeks. Then comes in week four, I think it was, and is a monster for like 5 weeks. Everybody's talking about how he's amazing, how he's taking to a championship, how he's next year's number one pick without a thought. And then just like every other rookie, he got tired. And it just happens. There's nothing against the rookies. They're just not prepared for an NFL schedule. And that shows down the stretch when you win your title. And, you know, I was lucky enough 2 years ago to win two titles and in two very competitive leagues, one of them 12, one of them 10-man. And the one thing I remember is I had two playmakers on each team. And one of them, on both teams, I had Antonio Brown. That was my guy that year. Everybody else was a little bit lower on him than I was. I got him in the second round of every draft, and I was thrilled. Now, I also happened to be very lucky and got early picks in both of those leagues. And I think in one of them I had, I think one of them was Matt Forte. No, one of them was Adrian Peterson, one of them was Le'Veon Bell. And, I had a top-level running back, a top-level wide receiver. Both were playmakers. And then in one league, I ended up getting Odell Beckham Jr. off the waiver wire when he exploded. And then in the other league, I got somebody else off of the waiver wire with Gronkowski. And so, that's just one thing I've learned is the teams I have that are good, consistent teams but don't have the explosive player get to the playoffs, but they don't win. The only times I've ever won titles has been when I had an explosive score. So that shows you how important getting either one of those first, 4 to 5 picks in the draft is, or to get somebody late in the draft to explode, like a Devonta Freeman. You know, we saw him last year with Atlanta.
Oh,
the guy was absolutely incredible. But, again, he failed at the end, right? He got tired. He couldn't keep it going. So, and there's so many questions. Does Thomas Rawls come back healthy? Does Mark Ingram, stay good from last year? Does Jordy Nelson, get healthy again? Does Doug Martin, is he really – what's that?
Can he get healthy? I mean, that's the question. Can Jordy Nelson get healthy enough?
And who knows, right? I mean, I haven't seen their first preseason game if they had it already, but I don't put too much stock, in preseason play until week 3 because there's so much, vanilla stuff going on.
You can't look at the first preseason game and get anything out of it. I mean, you have to look to week 3, week 4, the last preseason game, and then you have to judge people.
Well, and that's the problem, is judging from – also because coaches lie, and I don't know if this is just to throw other teams off, if it's because they genuinely guesses. But, I mean, think about the Buffalo Bills 2 years ago. Three. C.J. Spiller is poised to have a monster season. He's been sharing every year with Fred, whoever it was, I can't remember, who always ended up taking over because he was a better overall running back. But C.J. Spiller had the explosive ability. And finally it was his team. And the coach was like, we're going to run until C.J. Spiller's legs come off. That's our offense this year. That's where we're going to start, and we're going to go from there. And I love C.J. Spiller. I didn't end up getting him in any draft. Now, in hindsight, I'm thrilled I didn't get him because he was terrible. But he barely got any carry. It wasn't that he was that bad, but he never got a chance to excel. It's much like Lamar Miller down in Miami. They just never gave him the rock. He was so good, and they would never give him more than 8 to 10 touches. And you're just I don't understand coaches that don't use their playmakers. If you have a great player, think about Andy Reid with Brian Westbrook. Now, that guy got hurt all the time. But when he was healthy, the guy was crazy monsters good. And Andy Reid would get the ball into his hands 5 times in the first 2 drives every game.
Of course.
He set a precedent every single game. Now, I know the Eagles' offense was built towards screens and short passes and things like that because, he comes the guy that coached the Niners. Bill Walsh. So he comes from his school of philosophy for offense. And still made it a little bit easier to get the ball to the running back. But he still always got it to him. Like sometimes with the Vikings last year, I got a little concerned when in the first 3 drives, they've got, they got the Bridgewater back there passing the ball instead of running it with AP. And you know what? You run early, you run often, you've got a decent offensive line, you tire down the defense in the 3rd and 4th quarter, that's when you make your money. And coaches seem to abandon that for this, we've got to be a high-flying passing offense, but that only works if you've got a high flying offensive passing quarterback, and most people don't. So we'll see. I did see, unfortunately, your boy Goff, did he crack a rib? Or Wentz, I mean, I'm
Carson
sorry.
Wentz, not Goff.
So did he break
Carson
a rib, or did he just,
has
what happened?
Hairline fracture on his rib, yes. Thank you very much for pointing that out.
So now what happens? I mean, what is that? I've never had a broken rib or even a hurt rib. How, I mean,
hairline fracture, I've had two of them, and he's not going to be available until opening day. But
that's
he
what I've been hearing. Do you think that's possible?
I mean, he looked great. He only hit 50% of his passes, but he had an interception. But he looked great because he was running. He was doing this. He was doing that. And the fans loved it. My big question to you is the 22-0 beatdown on Chi-Town that the Broncos put on him. What did you see in that game?
Well, I mean, so
before
we
get
into the disclaimer, right? This is preseason game one. Don't read too much into it. But from what I saw that I really was very happy with was Sanchez, you know, people have been hating on him nonstop. Talking about getting players like RG3 or Colin Kaepernick. Well, Kaepernick can't start over Blaine Gabbert in San Francisco. RG3 looks like a train wreck in Cleveland. And Mark Sanchez had a first drive, 7-for-7, including a 40-something yard score pass. Beautiful.
But he had a pick,
pass
had a pick.
Demaryius Thomas.
That's the dirty Sanchez. He had a pick.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if he throws a touchdown for every interception, am I going to be unhappy? Hell no.
No.
If you pass a lot with Sanchez, you're going to get interceptions. I said from the start, he's a game manager. You need him to be there to make the passes you need on third down, which he was very good at. I think he was 3-for-3 on third down passes over 7 yards, which is terrific. Now, it is the Bears. The Bears are terrible. Coaching. No real talent on defense. I mean, can you even name a player on the defense besides Danny Trevathan, who they got from the Broncos?
I couldn't even name him.
So, yeah, I mean, I can barely name the offensive players on that team. So,
what do you think of Daniels?
Of who?
Josh Daniels.
Josh Daniels. What did he do?
The backup quarterback.
Daniels?
Or whatever.
Well, there's Simeon, who's their guy from last year. They got the seventh round.
I think that's another team.
Yeah, and he was. He was okay. He was fine. I don't think he looks. I don't think there's really that much competition. I think that's overblown. Lot of this is Kubiak trying to keep people on edge and keep the competitive fire going. I do know that Paxton Lynch. Played the second half. He looked okay. I mean, he looked fine. He's got tons of talent. I think it's a mistake to even consider starting a rookie.
Paxton, right? That's probably the first you've seen Paxton because I watched a lot of college football, and I saw Paxton play about 6 games last year. That was probably about the first time you actually got to see Paxton actually play. What do you think of his running ability and his passing ability?
I'm too early to determine. I will figure that out once he's played more, once he's played against, he needs some first-team reps, and I need to see him playing against a real defense. I don't think that he has the ability to pre-read or post-read coverages. So pre-snap or post-snap, I don't think he's really got either one of those down yet. That's something he has to get down first. The other thing is I don't think he's able to digest playbook yet. Peyton Manning – couldn't run Kubiak's playbook. He could understand it. He just didn't have the physical wherewithal to run it. Paxton Lynch does have the physical wherewithal to run it. We need to find out if he's got the mental fortitude to run it. But, first-round pick, trade up to get him. This is obviously the guy of the future. I just hope that they look at this completely as this is Mark Sanchez's team this year, for better or for worse. If our running game isn't good, we're not going to win. If our defense isn't good, we're not going to win. So we've got to do those two things anyway. Let Paxton sit back, learn, study film, watch coverages, and any games that look like they're done, you know, try and get him two offensive possessions in every win. That would be I'd be happy with that.
I would agree with that. So let's
now,
get
the go ahead.
The Olympics, Rio 2016.
Yeah, that's been awesome. I love Summer Olympics. I know you like Winter Olympics more.
I know. Yeah, I'm a Winter Olympics guy, but I love.
What are the events that you like? Which event?
I said I love me some Summer Olympics too.
But what are the Winter Olympic events that draw you?
Skiing, bobsled, luge. Let's see. I love the biathlon because they shoot.
Is that the skiing with the skiing guns?
Yeah.
Okay.
They ski and they shoot. And I mean, I love downhill and slalom skiing. Mikaela Schiffer and Lindsey Vonn are my two biggest heroes in my life. I mean, I look at them and I'm like, if I get my knees replaced, which I have to next year, I want to be like them.
Yeah, I mean, that's okay to me. I just get bored watching the Winter Olympic events. But I'm also, I don't find skiing that entertaining, so that doesn't help.
Yeah.
The luge and the bobsled. Yeah, I mean, the luge and the bobsled are cool. It's also like the way the Summer Olympics are broken up. Is, you know, you got the swimming in the early night, then you've got gymnastics in the middle night. Now we've got the track and field events coming on. And, you know, I feel like swimming is always a really good way to get people into the Olympics because everybody likes to swim, even if they're not good at it. And watching people who are talented at swimming is really a cool thing to see. And these days, I mean, just especially these last two Olympics, the three Olympics, we're seeing the greatest swimmers in the history of the world. I mean, it's not even very close.
The only thing I can say about swimming is I really like it, but you can only see it after they're done because they show the underwater camera of how their bodies are moving. They're just throwing their arms out there.
I agree. I think that they should stop with the side view except for maybe at the end or the turnaround time when they hit the edge of the pool and spin around. I think the rest of the time they should have underwater cameras, like three or four of them, and because you're right, because you see so much more underneath than you see from above, and you see why a swimmer is good when they show you underwater, or even a sideways underwater camera. You know, I mean, anything other than like you're talking about just showing the splash spot, because then all you really see are heads bobbing out of the water,
right.
Or you know, or the occasional arm. But I mean, this has been an amazing swimming. So I mean, Australia was horrible 4 years ago, and that was like a big embarrassment because obviously Australia is a very big swimming country, and they came back and it looked good in this Olympics, which kind of helped add to the interesting stuff. Now there's a Kintinka. I think it's Hozu. I don't know. I hope I'm saying that name right. She is, I think she's, is it Turkish?
Yeah,
I'm saying the right thing. It's somewhere in that area, and I apologize if I'm getting the wrong country. I probably am. But she is, basically, she hooked up with a guy, swimmer, who's a big Olympian guy himself, and, like, gave her, or kind of taught her better ways to train and focus and prepare. And so she's done extremely well in these Olympics. One event, she didn't get the gold. The rest of the events that she's been in, she's blown away the field. Oddly, they're giving almost more credit to her husband. His name is Shane Tessup. And it's kind of led into a bit of concern among some groups that the Olympics seem kind of sexist. And it is interesting. At first, I didn't think about it because I think being a guy, you don't really notice it because you just kind of assume guy sports are better, you know, and probably shouldn't, but we just do. And you can see how it kind of bleeds into it because Katie Ledecky, who's a swimmer for the U.S., has had a great Olympics. You know, one of the guys was saying, some people say she swims like a man, right? So it's insinuating, oh, she's so good that she's like a male, which is, you know, kind of insulting. Gary Walsh.
That's
Jenny
really
Z.
weird because, I'm like, how do you swim like a man and not like a woman? I mean, swimming is the same motion.
Right. What they're just saying is she swims fast and powerful. Now, one thing I did notice, and this is also probably going to be sexist, and I apologize, but her body sculpting in her swimsuit, when you see her get out of the water, her shoulder blade area, like from, you know, if you look up your arm, there's a spot from your shoulder down to your waist, you know, looking towards your back, that area of her body is massive. So I don't know if that's a genetic thing. I don't know if that's a workout thing.
That's a
but
thing.
She is broad.
I'm gonna stop you right there and let our fans know that we're not sexist here on the Sports Offensive. But that's a swimmer thing. If you ever met swimmers, because I used to know a lot of them when I worked at over at Spice Life Catering in Boulder, we had an Olympic pool outside, and we had two swim clubs that worked that trained there. And those girls' shoulders were huge, and their backs. I mean, that's how you can tell a swimmer. And like, if you're out at a bar, like, you know, bar, Starbucks, whatever it is, when a girl has big shoulders, you can tell she's a swimmer.
But I don't just mean big shoulders. I'm talking about, like I said, from on her back, basically from her shoulder down to her waist, her wing area is
that
expanded. Compared to everyone else that she was competing against. And I think that probably is part of the reason that she was doing better. Another person that they were giving an example of the sexism was Kerry Walsh Jennings, who plays the beach volleyball. And she was partnered with Missy May Traynor, and they won gold and were amazing. Traynor retired.
Yeah.
You know, Jennings got another teammate. Over the course of the last Olympics to this Olympics, she got pregnant and had a child. And I think it was actually her third child, but they were saying in the commenters or the comment groups or commentator groups saying amazing that she does all this after giving birth, kind of insinuating that once you've given birth, you know, you've passed your ability level.
Which,
it's pretty insulting to what's that?
I quite frankly think she's hot.
Well, yeah, but,
I always
but
have.
See, there's the problem right there. You can't say she's hot because they're saying, oh, now you're looking more at what she looks like than what she's doing, which is in the Olympics.
Oh,
and it's just natural for us anyway, because
she's the best.
Honestly, I think what women at some point do have to accept is guys' brains are really wired in one direction, and it's never going to go away. But as long as you're going to compete in sporting events, we want to try and keep it as equal as possible. Now, another problem was gymnast Gabby Douglas, who she had a little more controversy we'll talk about in a minute, which was just stupid. But one of the comments they made on her was she got as high up as a man on the uneven bars. So insinuating again that you can't get that you can't reach the height of athleticism that a male can if you're a female.
Of course.
So you know, whether this is, you know, was, you know, intentional or, you know, just people just not thinking before they say things, because these days, you know, you can't say anything without offending somebody, and there's no way, if you're being recorded all the time, to not make some comment that someone can twist in another direction. So, but I think what they were trying to get to is just, at some point, we do have to work on changing our minds and how we think. You know, and George Carlin, who was my favorite comedian, he used to say that we think in language, so the quality of thought can only be as good as the quality of language. And yet, he was a comedian. He was also one of the smartest people I've ever heard. And he's right. Language is a big deal. And if you don't use the right language, you imprint things in people's minds from the time they're children that they never shake off until they die. So, you know, I get it. They don't want to put the idea, especially into young girls, that their accomplishments will always be subpar to the male counterpart. So I get what they were getting at. I don't think it was intentional. The other thing I wanted to bring up about Gabby Douglas, and I'm curious to hear your opinion on this. So she got basically Twitter attacked because she posted a picture of them standing for the national anthem when they got their team gymnastic gold medal.
Right.
And she had her hands clasped in front of her and standing there. The other four girls had their hands on their heart. Now, this is something that I never, ever, ever heard about 8 years ago, 10 years ago, ever. But ever since Obama one time didn't put his hand on his heart during a pledge, this has become a big issue for some people, that it's unpatriotic to have the Pledge of Allegiance and not put your hand over your heart. Now, I was not taught that. When I was in school, I was taught for a man, you are to A, remove your hat if you're wearing one,
yeah,
and B, either clasp your hands in front of your stomach or behind your back. And that was the proper national anthem stance, and then sing along, of course. Now, the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, that was done with a hand over the heart. Maybe different in different schools. That was just what I learned. But what's your opinion? Do you think it's disrespectful to not have your hand over your heart?
You know, I don't think it's disrespectful. At baseball games, I take my hat off. Sometimes I place it over my heart. Sometimes I hold it in my hands. Either or, I took my hat off. If she chooses not to put her hand on her heart, I don't care. I mean, it's not unpatriotic.
I don't care either. I think it's you know, symbolic, which I think that's more of a big deal to people who are kind of shallow. You know, like if symbols mean a big deal to you, just like if
You're talking about Hillary fans.
I'm talking about shallow people. People who don't think very deeply.
People that
and
work for Hillary Clinton. That's what you're talking about.
Well, are you insinuating that I'm voting for Hillary? I'm voting for Gary Johnson.
Anything. I'm just saying shallow would be Hillary.
Well, I mean, I guess you can call her shallow if you want to, but I don't know if that has to do with anything. But still, I don't understand.
I thought I'd make a funny joke out of it.
But doing the Pledge of Allegiance, I get the heart over it. The national anthem, I don't. There is, you know, I mean, you can't get away from the fact that Michael Phelps, when he was standing for one of his, I think he ended up with 5 gold medals in this Olympics, was laughing and joking with one of the people on the podium during the playing of the national anthem. Nobody complained.
There was no massive
outrage.
He has so many Olympic or medals. I mean, he can joke with people.
Yeah, but you got to think about the fact that he's white, and no one gave a shit that he was being disrespectful during the playing of the Pledge of Allegiance. But when our black president has shown reverence but not put his hand over his heart, or now a black female gymnast doesn't put her hand over her heart, there's outrage. I mean, there was outrage on Twitter. I mean, like, telling her that she didn't deserve to represent the United States, that she hated her country. I mean, just visceral comments about this shit. And it just goes to show you that I just, you know, we're in trouble in this country, because that right there, the fact that Michael Phelps could do what he did on the stand and not receive one word of criticism, and she not being disrespectful in any way, she was staring at the flag, smiling, and singing along. But because she didn't put her hand over her heart, she got ridiculed and slammed and lambasted to the point where she had to issue an apology because of how badly she was being tormented. So, you know, the racism in this country is getting really bad, and I don't know that it ever was gone. I think it was just kind of politely covered up for a while. But the fact that people are just so openly extra critical of black people and everything. I mean, look at this event. This was to win the gold medal in a team sport for your country. And apparently that's not enough to say that she's a patriotic American.
Well, we're headed for a civil
just,
war in this country. I hate to say it. It's going to happen
sooner
than later.
I think it's
going to happen because we have the lower class and we have the upper class. There's no middle class anymore.
Well, and
so
there's the frightened white man class, which I don't understand it because it doesn't – I don't have any – I'm not a fearful type, but we've got a large segment of the white male population in this country that has become cowardly. And I don't get it. I don't know where it comes from. I'm glad that most of my friends don't belong in that group, but I don't understand. And I get why a lot of it's older folks, right? Because they don't recognize what they see anymore. They see a country where there's not unlimited opportunity and you're not able to get away with murder and have everything handed to you as a white male the way you used to. And I guess I can understand I don't even know the right word for it. I guess the entitlement, you know, anger that some people feel. You know, my daddy got to do this. My granddaddy got to do this. My great-granddaddy got to do this. And now, you know, we got to treat everybody normal. We got to be nice to everybody. Got to give everybody equal chances.
Well,
it really bothers some people. And
our grandfather,
they're
going to
fight in that angry,
our
that anger and to kill people.
Our grandfathers had to fight in wars, and our dads had to fight in Vietnam, and now here we are with the Iraqi war, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. I don't even want to call it today. I mean, Jesus. You know, we didn't have to fight in that. I mean, there's some people that fought in that, and there are horrific tales of just, God, what they come back with is absolutely just amazing. And they're drug addicted. They're heroin addicted. I mean, they were popping,
Well, there's obviously the issue with the, you know, I'm sure you've seen the 22 push-up challenge, and that's been going around social media. And it's basically you do 22 push-ups a day for 22 days to try to raise awareness that 22 American veterans kill themselves every day. And, you know,
yes,
you got to think about that number. That's a lot of people in a year. That's a lot of people in 10 years. That's a lot of people in 20 years. But we'll go ahead and get back to the Olympics. So back into swimming, Mikaela Adeku, we mentioned her earlier. She's 19 years old. She's burly. She got, excuse me, she's got three individual freestyle golds in this Olympics. I believe she's got four golds overall, including a team swimming event. She has she's almost obliterated the world record in every event she swam in that was individual. Like, to the point where when they're swimming on the pool, they show the world record line, and she was her
she's
legs
fat.
Were ahead of the line.
Yeah,
you never see that. That's just
no,
crazy.
Definitely. I mean, let's look at the medal count real quick. The USA has 24 golds, 18 silvers, 18 bronze, 60 total. The next is China with 41 overall. So we're ahead. I mean, we're the USA. I mean, we're ahead in everything. I mean, that's just the reality of it. But
well, you know, it's been great. I mean, obviously, when we lose Michael Phelps, that's going to be a painful loss, especially if we lose, I think his name is Lasky. Lasky is his good buddy. So once they're gone, I'm sure there will, I mean, not that there won't be other good Olympics, but I mean, Michael Phelps is the greatest Olympian possibly ever, right? I mean, he's got 13 individual golds, 26 overall medals, 22 overall gold. He won 8 gold whatever the other one was. You know, he's been in four Olympics. People don't realize it's not his third, it's his fourth. He swam in the first one when he was 15 years old. He didn't medal in those first games. But, I mean, just to show you the talent that was there. And I heard a guy describing why he's so effective at swimming, and I didn't know any of these things. So he's like 6'4", right? But he's got a 6'7" wingspan. So his arms are longer than the average person. So helps him to propel further. He's got a long torso, but he's got very short legs for his height, which reduces drag by a lot. They're also talking about his feet. So I guess ballerinas have a measurement number, and it's about the flexibility of their ankle. Yeah, ballerinas.
Okay.
And so
I want to clarify that.
What's that?
I said I want to clarify that. You said ballerina.
What? Well, yeah, ballerina, you know, the dancers, ballet dancers.
Yeah.
And what they do is they have a certain degree of movement of their foot. And the higher the number, the more freedom of movement they have with their ankle on, with their foot on their ankle. And that allows for better poses and more dexterity. He has more flexible feet than most professional ballerinas. So his feet can become almost literally flat on the back of his legs because of how much dexterity and ability to move them he has. More than a ballerina whose entire life is based on the flexibility of her ankles. So those are the gifts that he has that they were saying make him such a great swimmer. I just thought those were all interesting.
Those are interesting feats. So just a FYI, Kenya just won the long distance or the marathon women's race in the Olympics. I don't know the woman's name, but she's parading around with a flag. But Kenya.
I would say it's a little bit less. I think it's a little bit not shocking that Kenya won. Kenya seems to win the oftentimes wins the New York Marathon, Boston Marathon, Boulder.
They win everything you're on.
That country, they obviously do very, very, very well in that event. Another, you know, obviously Jamaica does pretty good in the long distance running events.
They do.
The U.S. usually is competitive with that.
I mean, thinking about Jamaica, I mean, they are always competitive. Brings up a point of I hate saying this, marijuana. I mean, marijuana in our state is legal. The government just classified it as a class one narcotic again on Friday.
I saw that.
You saw that. I just we're speaking of Jamaica man. I just wanted to bring that up real quick. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Because, I mean, we deemed it legal and a couple other states deemed it legal, but the U.S. government declares it as a class one narcotic as heroin. Now,
it
I don't
really
know if you know anything about heroin. I know something about heroin because I've seen people on it, and it's not even close.
Well, no, if you've ever seen anybody on oxycodone, you've seen somebody on heroin.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. It's synthetic heroin.
That's what it is. I mean, narcotics is marijuana and narcotics, they're completely different things. I mean, I don't know what our government's thinking.
I've actually wondered that myself because, you know, when that was coming up for the reissuance or the declass, or the, you know, the changing of the schedule for marijuana, I don't really understand it because, you know, like you said, Colorado is legal, Washington is legal, Arizona is legal, Wisconsin and or D.C. it's legal, Wisconsin and California voting to make it legal. There's another, I think, 8 to 10 states where medical is legal. Ohio too?
Ohio voted it this legal because there were 6 people that wanted to have control of all of the marijuana in the state. They did it wrong.
Oh, right. No, I remember that one. Yeah, that was good.
I mean,
to monopolize the production.
40-some million plus in tax revenue last year in marijuana sales?
Done well for Colorado, and it's really kind of silly that you tell people what they can and can't do. But, you know, as with everything else, like we talked about why the Olympics, why players in the U.S. wasn't like just pulling people out altogether with the dangers of the Zika virus and the sewage and all the other problems. And it's money. And I think it's the same thing with marijuana. Even though states can make a ton of money on the taxes, federal government-wise, they're thinking they've got so much money invested in anti-drug forces, committees, organizations. There's a lot of money in there in politics. Money is always about skimming money off the top for yourself. And so many people make money off of the drug trade in this country, especially on the anti-drug trade in this country. And, you know, marijuana, while not a very dangerous drug and certainly doesn't seem to be worthy of its Schedule I placement, it's the most prevalent, and it gives them the most widespread need for money to address it, which is, again, more money that can be skimmed off the top. I do think it's interesting that the Olympics test for marijuana, and they did take a gold medal away from, I believe, a Canadian snowboarder who tested positive. And
they did, yeah.
You would think that you would deserve a better medal if you were high when you did it, because it's harder to do things. You know, it's like, it's not a performance enhancer. It's a performance, you know, maybe focuser. But then again, marijuana affects people differently when they're young than when they're old. You know, when they're young,
that
they
is
do a lot more focus.
True.
When people get older, it can be more of a spacey kind of thing. So, you know, it's just, you know, who knows. But I don't know if it was responsible for that green water in the competition pool in Brazil. I don't know if you saw the pictures of that. That
I saw the
pictures. So, I mean, we're talking
green water. That is processed water that is chlorined. And now, knowing I used to take care of my parents' pool when I was back home when I was younger. We have an in-ground pool in the backyard. Now, the water can turn green really fast, and it's really okay for you. But that's an Olympic pool. It shouldn't turn green. I would have never jumped in that pool.
Yeah, especially with all the other stuff you know about. Well, you know all the other stuff that you know about Rio, you know. What they've said is that some caretaker accidentally poured 160 liters of hydrogen peroxide in the water, and that killed the neutralized the chlorine and let the algae grow. Now, why are people pouring hydrogen peroxide? That's not part of chlorine.
That wouldn't
not
let
really
the
sure.
algae. I can tell you this right now. That would not let the algae grow.
I just don't understand what hydrogen peroxide. Why would you pour that in a pool?
It's called someone being dumb.
I guess I know they're trying to kill something else or what, but anyway, they yanked all the water out or drained it all out, and they filled it in with water from one of the practice pools. So apparently everything's okay, but that was just odd. You know, I mean. For Olympics where they had huge controversy.
I mean, looked at it going, why are these swimmers even jumping in this pool? I mean, when you look at the Rio games, you look at the corruption, the bad water, and all of a sudden you get a green pool, which is chlorinated and filtered with fresh water, supposedly. And why would you even jump in it? I would never jump in it.
No, I wouldn't either. But, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, overall, you got to give real props that the Olympics have gone off without much of a hitch so far, which is pretty shocking considering how bad everything looked going in. But, you know, things kind of change when big money shows up.
The consequences after it's all over. You know, when the rowers come back and they get sick and so on and so forth.
That's going to be very interesting.
Can we end our Olympic convert? Let's go one more topic on the Olympics here. Female soccer player.
We can't skip over the gymnastics. I mean,
we're going to get gymnastics. But what about the gay friendly female soccer player getting engaged on the field?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I know that. You know, Brazil is a very sexually open type of society.
There are more of them.
They're not.
I mean,
they're not
got
uptight,
it.
Like, you know, in America, where, you know,
they walk around in thongs.
Exactly. I mean, it's not like America where if a boob is shown on live TV, you know, all of America's youth has been destroyed. but they, you know, and we're also one of the, you know, few non, you know, Sharia law type countries that still treat gay people poorly in a lot of respects. In the Sochi Olympics, which were over in Russia, homosexuality is not tolerated in Russia.
Well,
I mean, they basically tell you that there are no homosexuals in the country. So,
Putin,
I mean, obviously there's a lot of speculation that he's a closet homosexual. You know, just large,
that.
Most people like him, you know, that need for control and visceral hate of homosexuals usually comes from being one that you, who doesn't want to be one. And Sochi was, you know, did everything it could to not accept homosexuality or transgender, things like that. So Brazil has been kind of quietly in words, but loudly in action, tried to show a lot of support for gender, you know, equality and things like that. So, what's that?
I said, of course they have.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm always in favor of that. I always figure we can just get to a point where nobody cared about any of these unimportant things, how much better our country, our world can be. Just, you know, all the fighting, all the anger, all the baloney. And it's like, at least at the Olympics in Brazil, they're focusing it only on the sport, right? They're not promoting one thing, and they're not hiding or trying to cover up anything. You know, it's also in the having to do with the homosexuals, but letting the teams that come from countries that do have kind of more strict social norms about women's dress, they are letting women, you know, in I think they're called hijabs or hijab, the full body coverings or the head coverings that are common in Islam. They've let, you know, there's been fencers that have worn them. They've let the female volleyball players in the, in the beach volleyball, the uniform is actually a bikini. And they did allow those women to wear the hijabs over the bikini. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's nice that it's like, you know what, whoever you are, whatever you are, that's fine. We don't care because you're here to compete in the Olympics in sports. So we're focusing on how good you do what you're here to do. And I just think that that's a nice philosophy to follow, that if we can all just care what you are or who you are, I just am going to judge you on how well you do what you're here to do. So,
well,
you know,
I would agree.
I just give them props for that. That's a nice thing.
I'll tell you what. Let's do this before we go into women's gymnastics. Let's go to a quick commercial break. Thank our sponsors, SageMediaLLC.com and EKFit.net. Sage Media is all your media needs. They will plan, build a website for you, so on and so forth. That's SageMediaLLC.com and EKFit.net. That is Ernie Kramer, and he is going to get you your nutritional health. He's going to get your products, your so on and so forth. It's not supposed to mention Beachbody, but I'm going to do it. You can find him at ekfit.net. And then we're going to go a quick commercial break. We're going to be right back, talk women's gymnastics.
Sports Offensive with JP and Mark. I am JP. Mark is on the phone line. We're going to talk women's gymnastics in the Olympics right now. Mark, take us into it.
So it was kind of accepted going in that the U.S. had the most dominant team. That hasn't always been the case, but they've got some amazing talent on that team. There's really two leaders. One of them is the gal that's actually the captain of the team, and I'm so embarrassed. I didn't write her name down. I can't remember how you say it.
Is Simone Biles the captain or not?
No. The captain is the gal who – it's her second Olympics. She's a reigning Florida team.
Carly?
I can't remember her name. But she's a reigning champion in that event, and she's the captain of the team, and she is, you know, obviously their leader, and she's been doing well. Now, Simone Biles.
Hold on, I'll get it for you. Just keep talking.
Simone Biles is an unbelievable talent. She did win the overall gold, I believe it was, in individual as well as with the team. She did a crazy floor exercise. I'm not usually a big fan of those. I think they're kind of boring, but she just did an amazing routine. So if you have a chance to go back and watch that in the team portion, it's really fantastic. And then she, when she does the balance beam, they talk about her freak athleticism. Like when she does her floor routine, she can get up to 10 feet in height on her jumps, which is just insane for how short she is, which I think is 4'7". And when she does the balance beam, she is so, I don't know if you say limber or bendable. She can do a backflip on the trampoline or on the balance beam, and she can almost watch her own foot touch the balance beam behind her before she then pulls her back up. It's just, they show the slow motion replay of it, and it's probably the craziest thing I've ever seen. That her, even when her feet are coming back behind her down to the balance beam, her neck is craned and her eyes are still trained on the beam. It's just, I really recommend going to watch that high definition slow motion video, because I've never seen anything quite like that. Overall, the team just crushed the competition. They were up by 1.4 points or 4 points or some incredible amount for gymnastics, and just walked away with the title. They've been going by the name the Final Five because they are the final team that was trained under Martha Caroli.
Caroli?
Caroli. I don't know if their name. Caroli. Okay.
Family.
Is what?
Caroli family. He comes from Romania, and he brought his wife over here, and he's been training our athletes for 20 years. The Parkettes in Allentown, PA, actually represented this games again for, it's now, I think, 20 years in a row. There's a gym in Allentown, PA, where their Olympic athletes train, and I know a lot of them, actually, that train there. You know, they're all great girls, and, you know, it's a top-quality program, and the Crowley family is a top-quality you know, family to train our athletes. I have to say that.
Yeah, I mean, it drops to them. This is the first time we ever got back-to-back team gold. So, you know, still another new accomplishment. Being Americans, we do get lucky because rarely are we watching an Olympics where we aren't competitive. One crazy thing,
so,
USA,
can I interrupt you real quick? I think you were naming Alexandra Rassman as the team captain.
Okay, so she must be the gal who's the amazing floor exerciser. So she's a reigning world title holder. And
girl with brown hair. Very beautiful, actually. She doesn't fit your Olympic build. She doesn't fit the Simone Biles build.
Longer, taller person.
Longer.
This is her last Olympic. She's retiring.
Yeah,
so, but, you know, she's a lot with the gold. So I think she's the only think she's the only one that's a holdover from last time in the Olympics. I know Michaela Maroney was thought she was going to be in it, but something happened, and I don't know if she got hurt or something happened, and she couldn't compete. But so she was that guy. She's the only one that came back for a second round. So two surprising things in terms of USA. One is Serena Williams got knocked out of the Olympics.
Thank God.
And, well, why would you want her knocked out?
I just don't like her. They need to drug test her for every drug possible. I mean, that girl is not a girl. I mean, she's a man.
You don't think they test her?
Oh, they test her. They need to test her more.
Well, I mean, she can't just be a physical specimen. I mean, I admit she's very,
tell me,
very
when
muscle,
you found a physical specimen that looked like her. It's not possible.
But why would you want her to lose? She's American.
Oh, I want the USA basketball team to lose. They almost lost to Serbia last night. Or the other night. I was rooting for Serbia. Why? Because they're a bunch of overpaid bunch of boys that don't give a crap about anything.
Well, that might be true. I actually think that they should change the Olympics for basketball. It was great. The Dream Team was awesome, right? But the original Dream Team was awesome.
Well,
but it's not a Dream Team now. It doesn't have the best players anymore.
Athletes that are going to the Olympics. You get
right.
to show.
Well, I mean, it was fun
now,
to put together
an all-time amazing team with
Barkley and Olajuwon and Jordan.
Women's basketball's on right now. They're playing China. They're up 6-3. Diana Taurasi's the girl from Baylor is kicking some ass right now. But I mean, I don't want to see a bunch of NBA athletes on the floor.
Well, I liked it when it was truly the All-Stars. I mean, there's no LeBron, there's no Stephen Curry. That right there kind of invalidates the whole thing anyway.
But we did it once
just to see what it would be like to just see the over-the-top, million times better team, what they would do in the Olympics. And they did what we thought. They just obliterated the competition and made it kind of interesting. Now we've done that. It's done. It's old. It's boring. Let's go back to using college athletes, non-professionals, like I said, non-paid, you know, just give them, let these people go represent the country, because I will agree with you that too many of the players on the basketball team don't seem like they really care that they're representing America. It's more about just kind of showboating and having a good time. And
Carmelo cares. Okay. I mean, he said he doesn't care about winning an NBA ring, which got to piss off New York Knicks fans. He is like, I want to win 3 gold medals and I'm okay. I'm like, wait a second.
Well,
so you don't NBA ring?
Carmelo knows he's not the kind of player that can lead a team to a championship. He can only be a part of a championship team. But in the Olympics, if
player,
he shoots enough goals,
not want to have a goal as an NBA champion. I mean, this is a big point for me because, I mean, I listened to all the talk shows, and when I heard Carmelo say that, I was like, did you really just piss off everybody in New York?
Carmelo's career is almost over, and he's not going to win a title.
He's got 5 more years.
Yeah, he's not going to win a title. He's not good enough. His only chance is to get put on a team that has 2 to 3 legitimate superstars, and they can allow him to do his low percentage shooting and not destroy the team. You know, he's a good scorer.
Well, they put a team around him, though. They put a team around him. A subpar team,
but they put a team around him.
I mean, it's not like the Sixers. I mean, the Sixers have draft picks. I mean, they're going to be – actually, the Sixers might actually make the 8th spot in the playoffs this year. I have no idea. I'm looking at the Knicks as a 5 seed in the playoffs.
Boy.
Now, can they beat Cleveland?
Yeah, I mean, they're on the East. I mean,
in Cleveland.
They're terrible. Derrick Rose, is he actually going to play a whole season or something? Are his knees not completely shot? I mean, they got Porzingis, I guess, is their number three. But still, does that team really strike fear in anyone? Maybe I'm wrong.
With that line,
I'll
tell you this. The teams in the East have to be aware of the Knicks this year. I guarantee that.
You're coming in and out a lot.
Say again?
Just as an FYI. I think you might want to check on your microphone because you're coming in and out a lot.
Well, I'm sorry, man. My bad.
No, I just didn't know if it was not hooked up right or something. Anyway, last thing about the U.S. in the Olympics, women's soccer lost. That's kind of odd. They lost to Sweden, and they lost kind of early. They dominated the World Cup, and they've dominated the Olympics for so long now.
I'm very glad they lost. I think they need to be knocked down a peg because they've been so dominant in every aspect of women's soccer that the loss will give them motivation now. I mean, so I'm glad they lost.
I tell you what's kind of odd is in men's soccer, we just can't find a way to really compete. But in women's soccer, we pretty much just have been dominating for a long time. I don't quite understand why that is. I don't know if that means that in other countries they don't really let the women play or if it's just that we have bigger, stronger women overall from all the hormones and all of our food but it just...
We didn't lose to China. I mean, China was our biggest competition going into the games. We lost to what? Sweden or Switzerland? I don't even know which one of them.
No, we lost to Sweden. And Hope Solo said, quote, "We lost to cowards." Now, she was referring to the fact that they were playing essentially the same style of ball that Spain played when they were the dominant country there for about 6 years, where they would just play defense and keep the ball away until they would just do a light pressure until you made any little mistake, and then they were really good at capitalizing on that one mistake, getting a goal, and then winning the thing. Sweden got ahead. They just tried to play keep away to just run the clock out. USA did eventually score a tie late in the game, and then it went to penalty kicks. Now, I think part of this is that Hope.
I'm sorry. Penalty kicks in soccer are like the goal to anybody. I mean, there's no way the goalie's going to get it. Unless you're like the top star goalie.
Well, Hope Solo is one of the best goalies in history, but she lost.
She is, but, I mean, she can't cover every corner, right? She can't, like, throw her foot out and cover the other corner when she's covering one corner, right? The goal's too big. The goal's got to be smaller, in my opinion. Soccer's too easy.
You're not cheating, man.
I think soccer's too easy. You kick the ball.
Too easy. Most of the scores in soccer are, like, 2-1.
It's still too easy.
We have a lot of ties.
Yeah, because
I don't think that's true.
I'm not a fan of soccer at all. It's not even a sport to me.
I like soccer a lot. I actually wasn't a huge fan of soccer until two things happened. One was EA released that FIFA soccer game, and I don't think now it's been like 7 or 8 years. So
let's go to Darth Vader.
Say what now?
Let's go to Darth Vader right now.
Go to Darth Vader? Well, he was in a new trailer.
Oh, Star Wars quote, if you're going to go to video games. Oh, by the way, the USA is up 24-5 on China.
Oh, I have no idea what that nonsensical comment was. But anyway, it became a big
language to me. I mean, something.
Well, it's the same thing if I'm talking politics to you, so just get over it. So in that video game, it allows you to play 4-on-4, And so we would get into big battles with, you know, six, seven, eight of us playing at once in teams against each other in that FIFA soccer game. And you started to learn all in the same room. And you started to see how you make goals in soccer, and you realized why the scores are so low. And it's not because it's not a good game. It's because you have to run the same type of situation over and over and over, but what you're waiting for is your opponent to make the mistake and capitalize and get your goal. It's kind of like how the Patriots play offense. And it's really amazing, like, how the different crosses work, how the different through balls work, how the different header types work to make goals happen. And I never knew any of that just watching the sport, because you just kind of like, well, they're just not really doing anything. But once you were involved in the playing of it, in the gameplay and the design of a play to actually try to score points, now when I watch soccer, I see what they're doing. Oh, they're looking to do this. Soccer is just like hockey. They should do, all camera angles should be from above the eye, overhead. Same thing in soccer, because it's 1,000 times easier to understand what they're doing. The side shots don't show you how the plays are being developed. Now, the other thing that made me fall for soccer is the way it's designed for TV. Two 40-minute, 45-minute halves, and that's it. There's no breaks. The clock doesn't stop unless there's a horrific injury. So you don't get commercials. You just sit and watch soccer. Then there's halftime. You can go take a piss. You can go make a sandwich. You can avoid the commercials that none of us care about. And then you come back and watch the second half.
That's why Americans don't watch.
That's why it'll never get support from American businesses. Because it won't work for advertising.
Ads all over the field and so on and so forth, because Americans aren't going to support it, because you can't sell it. You can't sell soccer.
Well,
you know, when I go
Americans
out there,
aren't
gonna, you can't sell soccer at all. Because
America's not going to support it because the media isn't going to be told to make Americans like it. And Americans do what they're told. Americans don't really think for themselves for the most part. So if they got to a point where business could make enough money off of soccer, then Americans would start to love soccer, because they'd be told to by, you know, ESPN and Fox News and Fox Sports 1 and NBC Sports and, you know, and then the radio shows and stuff. I mean, you know, don't ever fool yourself. They tell people what to talk about. I mean, the NHL pissed off the sports organization, and what happened to the NHL? It's plummeted down to the bottom
to
of the barrel.
Sports Network and got off ESPN, and they screwed themselves.
Right, but I'm just saying all of media stopped talking about the NHL. They almost never talk about it on ESPN, on any of their talk shows. They almost never talk about it on 104 The Fan here in Denver. They almost never talk about it on 850 KOA here in Denver. So, I mean,
everywhere. Realize the Avalanche are horrible. I mean, Patrick Wall just resigned. I mean, thank God he did, because he has no support from anybody.
His teams were not good when it mattered.
No, they weren't. They didn't draft a bully.
They didn't stop on the throat.
So, I mean,
so if you can't teach your team to stomp on the throat, you're not going to be a head coach in a sport that's as physical as hockey. But, too bad we lost Wall. I mean,
he's got to have some control over who they bring in, who they don't bring in, how they do the sport. I mean,
I think in hockey, they did
not get any defensemen. I mean, he looked at the team going, I can't win with this team. He's like, I got a subpar goaltender that should be a backup somewhere else. And I have no defenseman.
And they didn't get another one.
Yeah. It's just like they didn't do anything in the trade deadline where other teams did.
Yeah. It's just too bad, because I like Wall.
I blame
Wall. He's obviously a team hero. But, you know, it is what it is. It's hockey, and that's always going to be the fourth sport here in Denver. So They're never going to spend the money they should.
Because we have one of the best hockey programs at DU that you ever see in college sports. And I'm getting us press passes this year to go to them. When you watch DU play, I mean, they play like champions every single time. Just like the lacrosse team, they play like champions. Every single time they hit the field or the ice, they play like champions. It's just it's the mantra of Notre Dame, play like a champion today. And I hate seeing it, you know, not be said. And the worst part is we're about to come up on the CU-CSU game, which I'm probably going to get media passes for. It's going to be on ESPN. Why? Because it's on a Friday night, and no one's going to watch it. I mean, who wants to watch
Friday?
CSU? Yeah, it's on a Friday night, 6 p.m.
September 7th. It used to always be on Saturday night. It used to be on Saturday night, which was cool because then we could have our fantasy draft the same night as the football game was on. That used to be fun.
Yeah, not going to happen this year. Clear schedule.
No,
I'm
not this year.
A press pass, though. Clear schedule. We're going to be on the field for that one.
Okay.
But it's like they moved it to Friday night because they knew ESPN would cover it if it was on Friday night. On Saturday night, they're not going to cover it because – you've got Florida State, you got Alabama, you got LSU, you got all those other teams playing, and like no one really cares about CU-CSU. So they moved to Friday night and said, hey, you know what, cover us. And they did. More power to them.
I don't know why does CU not have a hockey team?
CU has a hockey team. They're a club team. They're not a registered team under the name of CU. They're a club team.
Well, that's my question.
I know the announcers that do the games, and I know a couple of players. They are a club team, just like their lacrosse team is. They're a club team. They're not a NCAA-level team. They're an MCLA team. Hockey is a different – I don't know what the association is, but they're a club team in hockey. I'd love to see them go, you know, NCAA in hockey, but – you know, you have to realize that Title IX only allows you so many sports. Arizona State just got a men's hockey team. They're going to actually probably come to Denver this year, which is going to be a really great game. Well, actually, it's going to be sold out. Boy, Mark, we're getting a whole nother subject here. There's a whole lot of things that go into getting yourself – a registered sport, excuse me, in, you know, the NCAA. You have to have this many teams. If you have too many teams, you can't even bring one on. Like ASU lacrosse should go into NCAA lacrosse. They're MCLA right now, but they don't have a spot open for that. And that's the biggest thing is a lot of these schools don't have spots open for a women's program or a men's program where you can actually get a sport into the mainstream. Well, like CU, why do they not have a baseball squad? Why do they not have a hockey squad? I mean, they have all this. They're just playing club sports.
Probably more important than a ski team. Before we run out of time, we can move over to baseball real quick. And we had a kind of a big event, or two events this week, really, was that two different players retired, and yeah, neither one were we aware of before the season started. So A-Rod is no longer a Yankee. He was released on Friday. That was great. Anything that makes the Yankees bad is good. Interestingly enough, they said he was going to get a front office position. I'm not so sure if that's still happening. They did release him, and they owe him like $40 million. And
oh, they're going to $20 million for, 2019, I think.
What's that?
I think they're going to pay him $20 million through 2019.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't really understand I think they just did this to get him out of the lineup because he's not playing very well and just kind of
cut
the old guard and start with the new.
He strikes down. He does nothing. I mean, he was a DH and he strikes down every time. He sucks.
So they got to get rid of Teixeira. They got to get rid of Sabathia. They got to get rid of Ellsbury. Well, I'm going to keep Ellsbury for a little while, but they got to get rid of Brian McCann. They're old, and they got to get rid of players and get young. The other guy that retired was Prince Fielder. And this is really weird because we didn't even know he had any problems. But apparently his neck is bad.
Yeah,
and
I heard about this
doctors,
a little bit ago, and I didn't make a big deal out of it because Prince Fielder, he didn't make a big deal out of it. He went out on the same home run record that his dad set, which is, you know, in my eyes, awesome. And if he's going to retire, if he's going to retire,
390 home runs for both him and his dad. I don't know if maybe that aided in the decision at all, but
it probably did.
I don't know. It was just very crazy.
If you have a bad neck, you have a bad
numbers of that.
Yeah, if you have a bad neck, you have a bad neck. I mean, there's no doubt in your mind that you can't play because your neck is bad, and when your neck is bad, it means your spinal cord is bad.
Yeah, and I don't think if someone told me that my neck was at risk, I probably wouldn't play either. So,
And then that's the whole thing. I mean, do you really want to put yourself at risk to die early? I mean, his dad died early.
Is Cecil Fielder's dead?
I thought he was. I mean, I thought he died a couple years ago. I mean,
maybe
I'll look it up.
I don't know. Inductions into the Hall of Fame. No, he's not dead. He's still alive.
I'm going to make sure of that.
And
go ahead. Keep going.
So, Mike Piazza and Ken Griffey get in the Hall of Fame. Not much question on those guys. Griffey, maybe a little. I mean, when he played, he's like Terrell Davis. When he was playing well, Ken Griffey Jr. was one of the most amazing players I've ever seen play the game. But he didn't stay that way very long. And pretty much as soon as he went to Cincinnati, he spent most of his time, you know, back and forth on injuries. He came back the last few years to be somewhat competitive, but overall, he never recaptured the magic that he had with the Mariners. So while I see the talent, I'm not sure if I would have given him a Hall of Fame. Piazza, you have to give Hall of Fame. Most offensive catcher in history. I'm sorry I'm losing my voice.
No, you're okay.
And
Cecil Fielder is still alive. I was thinking somebody else. My bad. That's my bad.
But you think either Prince Fielder or A-Rod get in the Hall of Fame?
A-Rod, no. Prince, yes.
It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, A-Rod should, because he's a 40-40 man and 50 home runs three times.
Undefeated
best player for like 5 years. But
the Yankees, he's not getting it. I guarantee it. I will put $1,000 down on it in Vegas.
I can't believe what I might take that bet. I can't believe that he was with the
MLB
Yankees for 14 years.
He sued the MLB, dude. I mean, who sues the MLB and says they're going to get in the Hall of Fame? It's like,
it's because they illegally kicked him out of baseball. I mean,
they didn't illegal. Dude, he failed every drug test possible.
Right, but they made his suspension different from others who had failed.
God. Oh, dude, he is never getting in. They will block his. He's going to be the Pete Rose of our era, even though Pete Rose is still in my era.
You got to remember, Major League Baseball Hall of Fame isn't decided on by Major League Baseball. It's done by the writers.
That's why he's not getting in. That's why he's not getting in. Because if they're not going to get Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, they're not letting Alex Rodriguez get in the Hall of Fame. I mean, get this straight. I mean, it's not even going to be close.
Well, I'd be surprised. They almost have to let him in.
No. If you have to let him in, then you leave Pete Rose in. I mean, that's the only explanation I can give you.
Yeah.
And they're not going to do it.
I don't think Prince makes it, but I think A-Rod gets in at some point. I'm not sure if he ever – I don't even know if A-Rod actually ever tested positive. But I do know he was connected to some pretty sketchy places. Your boy Timmy Tebow is saying he's going to come out of retirement and try to play baseball.
I have no idea why he's trying to do this. He played baseball in high school, and I thought he played baseball for a year in college. No, I couldn't be wrong.
No, just high school.
Looking at his swing and batting practice that he had in the cage, I'll tell you what, he's got a great swing.
I think that he is underestimating, much like Michael Jordan. You know, they're great athletes. They're good at everything they do.
Michael Jordan played for the owner of the Bulls in their minor league system because he owned the White Sox.
But what I'm saying is these athletes don't realize that being a great athlete overall, being able to play a lot of sports, and then excelling in the one that you play isn't the same thing as facing players in another sport who have dedicated their lives to it. And I think that when he steps in the lineup,
people are saying Tebow didn't go through the process of playing in Norfolk, playing in Mass, in all those systems, or playing in the or this, that, and the other thing. You know, he's going to be a low class A ball player, if that. Yeah, and they're saying taking a person off a 23-man roster that should deserve a place that played in Norfolk or somewhere. I mean, you have to understand, on the East Coast, there's a lot of independent leagues that have a lot of kids playing at a high school that are looking to get into the majors. And we don't have that out here.
But Tebow's going to sell t-shirts. So Tebow will get a spot.
And that's the big thing with everybody. He's not going through the right process of doing this. And that's the big thing with everybody surrounding this right now. They're all screaming at the process. And I'm like, you know what? If he chooses to try to play baseball, let him try.
I think he'll get embarrassed. But I also don't understand what the hell he was thinking. This guy could have played tight end or fullback or scat back in the NFL.
Don't want to.
And he wanted to be, only wants to be a quarterback. He's just like Eric Crouch. What's wrong with these people? You have a chance to play on the biggest stage in the world and make millions of dollars and get endorsement deals.
Eric Crouch was
just
even
if you're willing to accept that you are a shitty quarterback and you might be able to play another position. I mean, Eric Crouch was a joke as a quarterback. He was an absolute joke.
Yeah.
I remember people talking about how he was such a great player. It's like, well, but being a great player in college most of the time just means you were faster because people couldn't catch you. There's so many college teams that if you're truly fast, you're going to be successful because no one can catch you. In the NFL, it doesn't matter if you're fast. They can still catch you because they're fast. So, you know, Tebow could have been so good, though, because he's got the instincts, he's got the nose for the ball. Imagine him as your punt returner, right? He'd be great because he'd be hard to break down. The guy's huge. And then you have him as a tight end or as even a receiving running back or a fullback. The guy's big. He's strong. He can open up lanes, and he could pass him in the backfield or pitch it to him and let him run. You know, use him in your wildcats and shit. But, no, he won't do that because why? Because he's used to being the quarterback. He's used to being the big man on campus, and he can't handle doing the grunt work because he's been exposed to being a star for too long. So
they have a statue of him outside of Gator Stadium. in Gainesville.
He has
a
statue already?
Yeah, of course he does. Won him national title and won him probably the most games ever as a starting quarterback. Outside
of... No, I know he was good.
Old ball coach.
But with him, the same with Eric Crouch. You know, like, they talk about how great he was in Nebraska. And it was like...
He was great in Nebraska.
Put him up against any team that have... Let any team that have decent linebackers play against Nebraska, and he's going to get destroyed. And I'll never forget, I was working in a kitchen while I was a grill cook at a company up in Boulder back then. I was going to school. And I'll never forget all the good old boy types that were working there that would come in for breakfast. And they, I mean, for the whole, like, week or 2 weeks, oh, my God, Nebraska's going to walk all over Miami. All the Hurricanes are going to get there.
Not even
close. This is going to be they're just going to run it down their throats and destroy them. And I kept saying, you guys are nuts. Miami is full of super fast, strong athletes. They're going to dominate that game. And
that's
was like, no. Crouch is amazing. And I'm like, no, he's not. He just runs an option. And
the guy
that was embarrassing.
Here's the biggest argument against what you're saying. Eric Crouch run the option. And you know what? Miami's athletes beat the option. And that's why Eric Crouch went nowhere. He couldn't throw the ball. I mean, he's never going to be an NFL quarterback when you don't throw the ball. I mean, Tim Tebow at least can throw a ball. I mean, Eric Crouch never had to throw a ball in his history.
It blows my mind that they actually draft these guys as high as they do. Like, why did McDaniels draft Tebow with a 23rd, was it, pick in the draft, a 28th pick in the first round? I mean, how could anyone in any way have looked at Tim Tebow, the player he was, and say, this guy is worth first-round money for the NFL? First round. Those are the picks you really should never get wrong, because you just picked one of the 32 best players in the entire NFL draft. If you can't pick out the top 32 best overall players, then your scouting department needs to be completely redone. I mean, really, that's what was going on with the Browns all those years.
There's a cap on what they could have paid him. Two, he's going to draw a fan base. Three, he's going to draw an audience. And that's what they were looking for at that time, because they had nothing going for them at that time.
But see, I heard a very interesting theory from Colin Cowherd. If you ever listened to his show on ESPN back in the day, he's on NBC now.
I don't mean to interrupt you. Real quick, we want to mention the passing of John Saunders from ESPN. Very striking. I actually watched as it kind of happened over the air. I still don't know a reason or how it caused that he died, but we want to give John Saunders a shout out right now, because he gives guys like myself and Mark a forum to do what we do. And Mark, like I said, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I had to get this in before we get off the air. When John Saunders died, I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, I do what I do because John Saunders probably taught me what I did. And people like, all the other guys on ESPN taught me what we did. We're going to lose Berman to retirement. We're going to lose a tight end for the Broncos, Jackson, to retirement. I look at the entertainment world right now, and I'm saddened by what we're going to lose today. And John Saunders was probably one of the best influential people that we had. I mean, Mark, comment, please.
I liked him. I don't remember him as well as I remember a lot of the other guys. His voice, I'll never forget the way his voice sounded. And he was good on SportsCenter, and I think he also did, a lot of those other guys, I think he did the NFL programs with them, like NFL Primetime and stuff.
Did the NFL?
Um,
SportsCenter way back in 1990. It was him and Chris Berman on SportsCenter. And if you look at him that young, I mean, you almost have to laugh going, oh my God, that's John Saunders. Because he looks like...
No, and I miss, you know, I mean, I'll miss Berman when he retires. I'll certainly miss Jaworski. I'm already missing Tirico from Monday Night Football. You know, Bob Levy, you know, has been he's a behind-the-scenes guy, but he's getting near the end. And, you know, a lot of the guys that we grew up listening to, Overman's been gone for a while. Dan Patrick, I think, has never been the same since he left ESPN. But, you know, I mean, all those guys were trailblazers. And
on midnight.
Well, no, I'm just – I was talking about his radio show. But
okay.
Anyway, you know, yeah, I mean, it's sad for Saunders. He wasn't even that old. But I guess it's because my perspective of old changes based on modern health care and knowing that so many people make it to their 80s. But, you know, really, it's not that rare to die in your 60s. And, you know, it kind of makes you kind of take a retroactive look at your mortality and think, you know, it's not that. I mean, I'll be 61 in 22 years. 22 years sounds like a long time sometimes, but when you look back when you're in your 40s and you're like, wow, you know, 20 years, that went by really, really, really fast. So,
I guess,
you know, the next 20 could go a lot faster, and you don't know if you're going to have 20 after that. You know, I don't want to forget what I was talking about, the Tim Tebow draft by Jeff McDaniel, or Josh McDaniel.
Josh.
That was the Broncos head coach for a little while there. He took Tim Tebow, and I remember Colin Cowherd telling a story, and he said that he thought that Bill Belichick was kind of screwing with Josh McDaniel, and basically said to him, Tim Tebow is Ben Roethlisberger's talent with Tom Brady's, like, temperament. And
that
all these problems with quarterbacks, and there was a lot of problems with quarterbacks. I mean, you had Michael Vick issues, and then there's the Roethlisberger raping, and there was, you know, there's just, I can't remember all the stuff that was going on, but there was like five or six bad quarterback stories going around at the same time. And Coward was like, I'll bet you Belichick said to him, you don't want a problem at quarterback. I haven't had a problem with Tom Brady for 10 years. And we've gone to 5 Super Bowls, you know. You need to get a guy who you don't have to worry about causing problems. And they talked him into taking Tebow because the way Belichick thinks is, even if I get one player that I don't want drafted ahead of me, that's one more player I do want within my grasp. And I don't know if that's true or not, but that's a really interesting idea.
It is, because, I mean, Tim Tebow was your classic guy that's not going to get in trouble. And he was a moneymaker.
Oh, never.
He sold so many Broncos jerseys that the Broncos should be in debt to him.
Well, they are. And Tebow did two things for the Broncos. One, he put them back on the map after they kind of crumbled. Number two.
Well, I was at the game. I was actually at the game where they pulled the who'd you call it? What was his name? I don't even know.
Kyle Orton.
I mean, where's that guy?
Yeah.
I mean, they pulled Orton and put
him now.
We were screaming to put Tebow in. Like, put Tebow in. I'm like, this guy sucks. Orton sucks. I'm like, put Tebow in. And I mean,
well,
I was.
You know what was amazing about? What was amazing about Tebow was badly he played, but how lucky the team got. And
yes.
It was
just
funny because we saw all these teams. I mean, we saw the Bears with Matt Barber making an unbelievably stupid run out of bounds and stopping the clock. And we saw it was like a pick six with like 5 seconds left when the team shouldn't have been throwing. I mean, just get these wins that were just ridiculous. And I remember a few of my friends were like, wow, Tim Tebow is really good. And you're like, no, he's not. He's horrible.
He's not like, no, he's
four
a player.
Completions a game.
Yeah. He was a player in a situation that did well. And that's what you could say.
He was just along for the ride. And it was so funny because I started telling people, you know what, I'm an atheist, but if they keep winning and they go to the Super Bowl – I'm going to start believing in God, because it's the only way you can explain a Tim Tebow team winning, because he's that bad of a quarterback. He is that bad. And I'm not ripping the guy. I'm not ripping who he is. It seems like he's a great guy, and he does a lot of charitable work, and he's done absolutely wonderful as an athlete. You know, I'm going to try my best all the time, every time. That's wonderful.
Right.
You know, he's
right,
a great
right.
role model. No hate for the guy whatsoever. Just saying, as a Bronco fan and watching every one of his games, every minute of them, every pass, he is a terrible quarterback.
See,
so
at least
he's let go of that.
I thought he actually earned a position on the Eagles. He played well enough on the Eagles that Chip Kelly should have gave him a shot.
Well, Chip Kelly should have given anyone a shot to play for him, because he sure as hell alienated anybody else.
We are almost out of time on the show. Let's get to the power rankings in the NFL real quick. We're way almost on time. All right, so Panthers number one. Do you agree with that? I don't agree with it.
No.
All right, Cardinals number two. A lot of people have them as the number one team. Do you agree with that?
No.
Okay, Packers three.
Yes.
Okay, Broncos four. I think they are not even top ten.
I would put them six until we know how good the running game is.
Six.
Defense
right.
alone makes them would have made them a top
five
if they had a good quarterback.
Patriots five.
Patriots for me are number one because they'll get Brady back in week four.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Seahawks, I would have that as number two. They have them at six.
Six is good because we don't know their running game yet.
Yeah. I would go Steelers third. They have them at seven. And they actually have the Vikings at eight. I have no confidence in the Vikings at all. Teddy,
yeah, Vikings,
Teddy
I don't have
down.
Eight. Patriots, Pittsburgh, yes. Pittsburgh's a team that if they beat the Broncos in the playoffs last year, they had a chance to go all the way. And they were doing all right, that without waiting on and without Antonio Brown.
You want to do a fantasy football show this week? I mean, we can do it. I'll come up there and do it with you.
Let's look at maybe Thursday, but we'll post if we do one.
Okay. All right. So thank you for listening to Sports Defensive with JP and Mark. Till next time. Good day.